Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have the exciting finale of my three-part interview series with Dr. Joseph Ferrell on the deep state, transhumanism, and Common Core. Now, Dr. Ferrell's new book, Rotten to the Common Core, shows us how the very heart of the education system is being co-opted by covert forces of surveillance and control. Now, in the first two episodes, we uncovered the emergence of the transhumanist movement in the deep state in everything from education to politics. In this special part three episode, we'll uncover the forces behind it, from the Rockefeller Foundation to the intelligence community. Are we the subjects of a massive mind control experiment? Here we go. Dr. Joseph Ferrell, Social Engineering and the Surveillance State.
I think there is a link between this Common Core philosophy and transhumanism, and the link lies deeply within the 19th century and the beginnings of this whole progressivist education movement. The edugarchy are the people that control the requirements for certification. That isn't education. It's nothing but a loyalty test. Are you with our narrative or not?
You know, there's always a trend and a narrative in society that comes out of nowhere to serve a number of behind-the-scenes agendas. From mechanized education, self-driving cars, robot bartenders, and civilian spy drones, the question must arise, how do we embrace the emerging technologies while at the same time rejecting the sometimes insidious motives behind it? If we're being programmed to accept a corporate fascist world government with systems like Common Core in place, then what is their endgame? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Ferrell. Joseph, it's great to have you back for part three on transhumanism and Common Core.
Thank you.
Now, I want to say right off the bat that your first book that you put out this year, Hidden Finance, Rogue Networks, and Secret Sorcery, that dealt with fascist connections to 9/11, really generated a lot of buzz and a lot of interest and continues to do so with its revelations around Mohammed Atta and his strange connection to this German foundation that you researched and came up with. And of course, we did a three-part series on that as well. So when you did this book on Common Core, which has really only just recently come out, I think a lot of your readers who were really locked into the 9/11 book because it was so controversial are only now just discovering that it's even out there because it's a different publisher and a very different kind of topic. But I have a feeling once they discover it, it's going to do very well. And, of course, even though it's a different topic, we know that many of your books are sometimes related through underlying themes, like your book Third Way from 2015.
I had to write the Third Way before I wrote the 9/11 book because of all the just very bizarre, weird Nazi connections once again. And I know people think I'm stuck on Nazis here, but folks, the fact of the matter is the facts are there. You just got to look at them and see them, you know, to appreciate it. And they tie directly with the Saudis.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's really the most bizarre thing.
Oh, that's the big breakthrough in that book. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to start off with the new book is, you know, there's this big kind of meme out there about Common Core that they're pushing hard, which is that it's going to save these communities all this money and that everything is going to become sustainable around education because of it. Mm-hmm. Now, is that really true? Will implementing Common Core save these communities money?
I would submit no, it isn't. Because what we see happening already with people is that human productivity is declining to the extent that people are on their iPhones and so on. They can't think.
Right.
They can't produce. They can't create. They're being fed information that they're simply required to react to in a very superficial way rather than really understand it and think about it and respond accordingly. So in other words, what I think is going to happen over the long term is that as a result of this, human productivity, I'm not even talking about labor productivity in a factory or things like that. I'm talking overall human productivity is simply going to drop right off a cliff.
Wow.
And it's going to be more expensive in the long run because of that. Tax revenues will fall. corporate revenues will fall. We're already seeing this happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're already seeing the beginnings of this. And they want to put this system in the educational system? No, no. The other thing I think is going to happen, Daniel, is that in spite of this anti-human impulse that we see in our society and culture now, let's say they put this system into place. What's really going to happen is you are going to create a black market in what I call old-fashioned education. We're going to pay so-and-so down the street who knows something about this subject to tutor our kids, and he's got a blackboard in a bedroom, and that's what's going to happen.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I'll tell you something, it's very interesting. You go to Silicon Valley, where the elite send their kids to schools. Do they send their kids to schools with computers?
Oh, that's a good question.
For the most case, no, they don't. They know the value of that teacher and that human mentor. And by the way, you know, Steve Jobs said the same thing. Machines can do some of this, but you've got to have that human contact.
Yes.
You have to have that human mentor that can listen to your processes of reasoning and understand if those processes make sense, can add critical thought or information to expand them, guide the person in this or that direction that a human being alone can really understand and appreciate.
Exactly.
There's no substitute for this. None. So I think, you know, the more they take the human element out of the classroom, what they're doing really is they're creating a subculture where people with the money to do so are going to insist on that element.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. And it brings us to what we were discussing in the last episode about the real agenda behind the transhumanist aspects of some of this. Now, they definitely are going for this artificial intelligence theme and getting us to put our trust completely into that AI as a cultural norm. And really, there's a big push on that. So they're really trying to morph us into this transhumanism mold. So I guess the question is, what is the hidden factor here that ties programs like Common Core to the transhumanist agenda?
I think you're absolutely correct. I think there is a link between this Common Core philosophy and transhumanism. And the link lies deeply within the 19th century and the beginnings of this whole progressivist education movement. And we go into this history at some length in the book because it's so important to understand why we have the messed up system we have.
Oh, there's great history in the book.
Oh, yeah. It's unreal. It begins with a German psychologist by the name of Wilhelm Wundt in the University of Leipzig. Now, stop and ask yourself just this one little question right off the bat.
Okay.
Why would the United States of America, with the ideals and principles of a liberal constitutional democracy and republic, want to take a model of education from Imperial Germany?
Right.
You know, what, are we nuts?
It's a good question.
You know, what does Bismarck have to do with the American school? Literally nothing. But Wilhelm Wundt decided that psychology had to be put on a scientific footing, and the only way to do that was to mathematize it. And the only way to do that was to reduce the human being, in effect, to a stimulus response mechanism. In other words, under certain conditions of stimulus, how does the human being respond? And we take statistical averages of all of this. So in other words, it's a reduction right there of the human being. You've just taken the soul and the mind and thrown it right out of the picture.
Right.
And you've set up this whole stimulus response idea for education. Interestingly enough, one of his students was Pavlov, Pavlov's dogs, stimulus response. But Wundt educated a number of American educators who in turn then educate other American educators, and they take this stimulus response psychology with them. The most classic example being John Dewey. What does Dewey say? Well, Dewey says we shouldn't bother about reading, writing, arithmetic, geography, history, and all of this stuff. What we really need to be concerned about is the socialization of the child and making sure that his behavior patterns are going to make him a good citizen. And so what does that do in turn? It transforms the role of a teacher from someone who is to communicate a discipline into someone who is to design learning experiences, stimulus response, and a learning environment in the classroom that will produce that requisite stimulus response mechanism. So what becomes important for the teacher in turn to learn when they go to teachers' colleges? Well, what becomes important is that they get the licensure or the certification that they know how to apply the latest psychological educational theories to create the learning experiences for the stimulus response mechanism called the student. So in other words, we get teachers who spend more time learning psychological claptrap and edublither than they spend learning the very disciplines supposedly that they're teaching, like English, mathematics, biology, what have you. They've got their certification that says they know. Think of them as paralegals in this system. Right. They're not fully credentialed lawyers, or in this case, fully credentialed psychologists, but they've got just enough to give you a license to go out and practice the latest theory and apply it in the classroom. And if you don't think that this has had an effect on education, for all of you teachers out there, and I'll be very blunt, I'm totally opposed to teacher certification. Totally. The only requirement I would insist on is that if you're going to teach English, you know English.
Yeah.
If you're going to teach biology, you know biology. You can take the certification and throw it right out.
Right. So these teachers have to dance to these theoretical methods and can't academically study the actual subject.
That's the problem.
Yeah. So there's no growth, essentially.
There is no growth in terms of the actual academic content of the discipline you're required to teach. It's all focused on this psychologizing of the classroom. And all of that is based on this Wundtian philosophy that you and I are stimulus response mechanisms, nothing more.
Hmm.
Now, is that a handy progressivist educational philosophy? If you're a corporate foundation like Ford, Carnegie, or Rockefeller, or now Gates, to create a consumerist society to buy more and more of your products by imposing that whole philosophy top down in the classroom from kindergarten to high school? You betcha.
Yes. Well, the foundation part is so fascinating because they wield such a tremendous influence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have this very interesting term in the book, which is edugarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you explain here what that means?
Well, edugarchy is simply oligarchy with education. In other words, it's the professional educator. In other words, the person, the doctor of education that spends all of his or her time learning all of this psychological claptrap and thinking that they have any relevance to the teaching of math, physics, and so on and so forth. And again, I go back to the historical record here. We got along just fine without all of this stuff for centuries.
Right.
Plato didn't take a standardized test. He didn't attend an American teacher's college. He didn't get a teacher's certificate. Neither did Aristotle. Neither did Iambicus. Neither did Thomas Aquinas. And on, Immanuel Kant. On and on we could go.
Yeah.
These people were not subjected to this system of education because it isn't education. It's nothing but a loyalty test. Are you with our narrative or not?
Right. Now it's obvious where they're coming from.
That's all it is. And they're, you know, the edugarchy are the people that control the requirements for certification. They control the amount of, you know, theory that you have to learn to be good stimulus response managers. They're the people in charge of what theory are we going to impose this year in our continuing education courses. You know, on and on it goes.
Right. Well, it is fascinating because now with Common Core, they have the facade of being super modern. You know, like, don't you know this is the high-tech learning and you're going to learn it from software that's far more advanced than learning from a flawed human teacher. So they can make it so hip and trendy, and they can make it, you know, so that someone will think, oh, I'm getting this super high-tech education. And actually, as you point out, it prevents you from using critical parts of your mind, mm-hmm. and there's less problem-solving involved. And I want to throw in here, in case I sound anti-technology to somebody watching out there, you know, I've worked with Apple and was the editor of a major tech magazine for a decade, so I certainly embrace the possibilities of what we can achieve using the technology to help humanity. I think the problem is with something like Common Core and the Bill Gates-style approach on this. It's exactly what you're pointing out, actually. They can tailor your education to make you less curious. You know, don't ask questions, accept your programming. So that's where it becomes hazardous to the individual, and not to mention some of the deeper motives that are behind it.
Yeah. And on top of this, let's look at the claim here that they're really being more technological. Because the bottom line is, somewhere there's a committee of people composing those test questions. Somewhere there's a committee of people programming the computer algorithms to adjust each question to each individual student.
Right.
So in other words, you're not taking the human factor out of it. You're not really making it more objective. All you're doing is you're surrendering your local control and your individual sovereignty and response to a narrative that someone is presenting you far, far away that you don't know. I'd much rather deal, quite honestly, I'd much rather deal with the teachers I had. I can list them all from elementary school through grad school to this day that had an effect on me. It wasn't those standardized tests. It wasn't even the texts that we were reading. It was them and their influence on me.
Right.
It wasn't Chauncey and his educational testing service. It wasn't Bill Gates and his computers. It was people that had the influence on me. And through them, their influences. And through them, the books and ideas that they presented. And in every case, Daniel, what they were telling me is, you have to be responsible for how you, Joseph Farrell, react to this information. You may agree with it, disagree with it, articulate the reasons why. It wasn't the test. It wasn't the test, and it never will be the test. Sorry, Mr. Gates, you're just wrong.
Right, right.
You're a billionaire busybody. Go play golf. Leave us alone.
That's a good point, actually. Now, this idea, there's actually two things I'd like to tie together here. The idea that they now have direct access for the corporations and the intelligence agencies to young students, that's a biggie.
That's a biggie.
Yeah. And then this idea that they have this very unusual approach to arithmetic.
You think?
Now, after reading your book, I decided to watch some videos of students struggling with this weird Common Core math approach. And there was even one with a Common Core teacher explaining how these kids are more comfortable with the number 10. Mm-hmm. So we create these anchors to other numbers, like 9 plus 1 makes a 10, and 10 is your friend. Now you can be comfortable. You can see your friend, the number 10. And I was just thinking, what a bizarre head trip this is. So I guess yeah. The number 10 is the new Barney or something. But it did look like a reprogramming of how someone's mind develops around numbers and how ordinarily we should be able to look at things numerically and sum them up. But here's the strange appeal to being comfortable and building in this strange association.
Feeling good about it.
Yeah, exactly.
These numbers are our friend.
Well, I guess the number 10 cares more than we'll ever know.
There's so much nuttiness here, Daniel. And since you're talking about mathematics and the psychologizing of mathematics, in the very beginning of the book, Dr. Lawrence and I read this book, and we both laughed our way through this thing because it just The book is called Making the Grade, and it's by a guy that was in the testing business by the name of Todd Farley. And if you haven't read the book, folks, go out and buy this book and read it. You will be shocked. You will be struck dumb with the sheer banality of nonsense that these people have to go through with these standardized tests. Well, in one case, they were supposed to assign a numerical value to the use of certain words in essays that the state requirement had these students write. And they were given numerical values for the use of certain words. So literally, Farley recounts this endless debate of the scorers of these papers that were hired by the testing company to score these student papers in huge batches. And they were debating, well, is sluggish better than lazy? You know, what numerical value do we give to this? And then, you know, he points out the obvious. Some young kid raised his hand and went to the reductio ad absurdum. Well, you know, let's just cut through all the stuff here and assign a numerical value to every word in the dictionary, and that way we can just be objective about all of this. And this went on and on. What's the correct adjective for the flavor of pizza and ice cream? And, you know, does a boiling egg fizzle or sizzle or, you know, fizz, you know? And seriously, there are people debating this stuff, wasting time with this stuff, and being paid for it by these testing companies.
Wow.
And this is the bottom line. You know, if you're taking this stimulus response approach to everything, the bottom line is this was all supposed to be about objectivity, and the bottom line is it's totally subjective. They're just putting a veneer of statistics over it and saying, well, it's all scientific now, you know. Well, nonsense. Of course not. You know, and we make the joke, well, if we're going to do this, let's assign numerical values to artists and pieces of literature and composers, you know, and let's give them a numerical value. Is Glenn Miller better than Chopin? You know, give him a 5. You know? It's nuts. It's totally nuts.
I like listening to both those guys.
I do too, you know. For me, it's a kind of a toss-up, you know. It's nuts.
I think it is fascinating, and you really hit on something with this, because if you're in school and you learn the truth about, say, the Federal Reserve at a young age, and then you learned about the forces in the deep state that assassinated President Kennedy as part of your history,
right?
So you'd really grow up then with such a different worldview that you'd be essentially useless to the establishment and the purveyors of the official reality.
Right.
Because you're going to understand and see through it, essentially. Now, you won't be a minion anymore, and you won't kiss up to the system in that sense.
Yes.
So what we have now is a very politically correct mindset going on. And interestingly enough, it goes far beyond getting out of high school. Now, this makes me think, because I have a friend who graduated a few years ago from a prestigious school here in the Boston area. And she told me about what she needed to do to wrap up before she graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that she needed to do was attend these lecture series at the school by Homeland Security. And this was a requirement now. She couldn't get out of it.
Homeland Security.
Yes, Homeland Security. So you're in this academic university environment, and the only way to graduate was to attend and absorb what is essentially propaganda. And I reflected on this and said, well, you know, here's the real militarization, because it's a subtle influence on these students. Now, if we go to your ideas about intelligence agencies infiltrating the education system,
yep,
we can see they already operate in the college networks. Now, a major CIA figure, Kordmeier, actually told a congressman that the CIA had recruited Bill Clinton directly out of college and groomed him over time to be president. So that makes me think of your examination of Common Core, because it goes one better. Because if you can influence them as children, say 7 or 8 years old, wow, you know, then you'll really have them for life.
Bingo. Bingo.
It's like a lifetime engagement.
Let's remember that when Chauncey and James Conant at Harvard began to push the whole idea of standardized testing across the nation, and Chauncey setting up the Educational Testing Service, that for them, this was a means of finding and identifying what they thought were the gifted students so that they could slot them into corporations, into government, and so on and so forth. And the problem here is, as we pointed out, the problem with standardized tests as a mechanism for doing that is ultimately these tests punish the more intelligent student. We give example of after example of questions where the student knew more than the test takers in the far-off committees at ETS preparing the test question.
Wow.
And I do think you're correct. I do think that the intelligence communities are seeing these tests as a way to identify people and follow them and begin the process of slow recruitment at a very early age. But by doing this, what you're turning people into are, again, consumers of a particular narrative. Well, I know that if I were running an intelligence agency, and again, you know, that connection's there. I mean, it's clear that there was an intelligence connection with the standardized testing industry going back to the 1950s. So the question it raises to my mind is, if I'm a CIA analyst or in charge of some branch of the CIA that's responsible for analyzing intelligence from the Middle East or wherever, do I want people in my department who simply slavishly follow a narrative? Or do I want people able to look behind a narrative and be able to come up with possible scenarios?
That's a great point, actually. They would be recruiting very undynamic, non-complex individuals, non-complex thinkers, who would be very obedient. But that's the risk that you're pointing out here, which is, as they attempt to dumb down society, they may also be dumbing down their own ranks.
Yes. The elite, and I'm using that word very loosely, the elite have surrounded themselves with people of their own outlook for so long that they themselves are no longer capable of seeing or looking at things differently. They have dumbed themselves down in the process. And the example is this. In the book, we talk about, I think it was Dr. Lawrence that found this example. As a matter of fact, I forget which of us did, but we talk about one of these progressive educators by the name of Abraham Flexner, who made a proposal for a progressive education school where they were going to put these theories into practice and not spend so much time learning things like reading, writing, arithmetic. And he decided to call it the Lincoln School to make it sound patriotic and American. Well, John D. Rockefeller Jr. sent his sons to this school.
Huh.
He sent Lawrence there. He sent Nelson Aldrich there. And he sent David there. So at least back then, they were willing to expose themselves to the very stuff they wanted everybody else to do. You know, I can't see Bill Gates doing that, but, you know, times have changed. But anyway, the result was, and we put this in the book, the result was that Lawrence and Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller both complained that they had difficulty reading books.
Interesting.
They didn't like reading. They found it tedious to do. Really? And here's the problem with this. Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, of course, goes on to be an intelligence advisor to Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower for Latin America. He goes on to be a vice president under Gerald Ford, governor of New York. Do we want stupid people in those positions that have difficulty reading a book? Well, if they have a difficulty reading a book, they're going to have difficulty reading a memo.
Right.
You know, well, just summarize the main points for me. Well, in geopolitics and national security, the devil's often in that subtle detail. And, you know, same thing with Lawrence. I have difficulty reading books. So the elite really is dumbing themselves down in this whole process.
That's fascinating.
And is it any wonder then that we're in the mess we're in now? These people cannot come, you know, we were talking about politics earlier and how blatant it's getting. It's because they have no other playbook. They can't think in any other way.
Right, right. Well, they can't even get any perspective because for fear of losing favor, no one will tell them the truth.
Yeah.
That's a very hazardous state to live in. Yeah. And these guys are in control. It's unbelievable. Now, when we come back, we're going to go deep into the impact of having the technology destroy conscious thought in a society. We've never seen this before. Final round here of part three. Dr. Joseph Farrell, stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
As they were sitting there filming, a little saucer came from, a saucer came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark Journalist will go there.
The question must arise, how do we embrace the emerging technologies while at the same time rejecting the sometimes insidious motives behind it?
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption, because it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now put microprocessors and sensors, along with everything else, into every human body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, he's the author of the new book, Rotten to the Common Core, a real expose on the selling out of our education system to corporate and intelligence interests. Now, Dr. Farrell has written books also on transhumanism, the strange cult of merging humans with machines. And I guess these scientists have never seen the Terminator movies, which hold up remarkably well decades later, I'd say. Now, Joseph, we've been talking about how the covert forces are infiltrating our institutions and communities, the Common Core being a great example. So I guess my question is, what do you see as their next move? And, you know, some of the next things that they'll be implementing in this social engineering project.
This is, you know, you cannot imagine a more Orwellian system than, I mean, George Orwell would be appalled. You know, he was kind of writing in the kindergarten version of it. It's just huge. And the bottom line here, Daniel, I said Luciferian earlier, and I meant it. Mm-hmm. This whole thing is a spiritual phenomenon, and it's anti-human, ultimately, in its objective.
Yeah.
Because there is, in that system, in Mr. Gates' wonderful vision of the future, in Ray Kurzweil's wonderful vision of the future, there is no room for the transcendent or the sublime or the beautiful. And those are intimately human things. But you can get that from a teacher. You can get that from a teacher who knows how to inspire you with it so that you go out and learn on your own. I was so blessed with the teachers I had in public school all the way from kindergarten through high school.
Well, this seems really to be the crux of your analysis.
Yes.
That it's the human input that always makes the real difference.
Yes. Always. Always.
And you mentioned Kurzweil there.
And he's looking for that singularity, you know, this merge with machines.
Yes.
Definitely obsessive, definitely unhinged, like a bad scientist stereotype. But his message basically is, I'm going to do this and become like God, and don't try to stop me. Don't get in my way.
Yeah, well, you know, fine, have at it. Just don't impose it on us.
Right, exactly.
You know, and this is the problem. They want to impose this vision. And you look at people like Ray Kurzweil, and if you look at the philosophy carefully behind what they're saying, it's all going back to this Wundt character and the reduction. You know, I view Wundt as one of the blackest figures in human intellectual history.
Huh.
You know, people think Darwin, you know, the fundamentalists in this country think Darwin, you know, no, Darwin was as far from this as you could possibly be, you know, but you look at Wundt and this idea that the human being is nothing but a stimulus response mechanism and see how it has pervaded our educational philosophy. You know, we're basically being treated like we're experimental material for B.F. Skinner. You know, the infamous Harvard psychologist that raised his daughter in a cage and experimented with her.
Oh, yeah. Nice guy. You know,
yeah, real nice guy. it's this philosophy that we are nothing but consumers and stimulus response mechanisms. It's abroad in our culture. We see it in every day on TV and commercials. We have to be subjected to it in the schoolroom with these tests. You know, here's the stimulus. Give us your response. No, this isn't education. And I go back to that chapter in the book where we listed all those names, not in any particular order, just threw out a bunch of names. Our list might be different than your list. You know, everybody's got a list. Mm-hmm. But these people didn't go to an American school, take a standardized test from a teacher that was certified to teach, you know, by some education college and use the latest educational methods. No.
Right. That really is amazing. Well, just looking around, and I'm not inclined to be cynical at all. But what I'm mm-hmm. seeing is these people are locked into these devices, iPhones, walking around in a complete daze and, you know, walking off a bridge looking for Pokemon. And the younger you go, the worse it gets.
Yes.
So it's like there's no resistance there. They become obsessed with it, and growing up with it, you know, won't even have the sensibility of someone in their 20s now who can barely put it down.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of tech addiction is pretty idiotic. You know, it's a definite cultural hazard. But that next crew of kids, you know, wired in and surrounded by this stuff and taking in Common Core on the other side, what kind of mental capacity will they have by, say, 21? I mean, they will really be like robots with no ability to discern reality from virtual reality.
Yeah, well, look at the attention span of people because of this technology. We have the attention span of gnats.
Yeah.
And it's getting shorter by the day. Now, turn the clock back 50 to the 50s. Imagine the counterculture at the time. Imagine a Jack Kerouac, you know, riding on the road, had he been a modern millennial. Yeah. You know, we would be getting the most trivial, banal pablum.
Yes.
Offered to us as great literature and cultural critique. And, you know, this is the problem. We have through this system, we have created a system of mediocrity where greatness, genius, intelligence, responsibility, and individuality are punished. And that's the problem. And, you know, if this system continues, if we do not tear this system down, top to the foundations, if we do not tear this system down, in 50 years at the outside, this country is going to be a third world banana republic run by Hillary Clinton's and George Soros's, and they themselves are going to be the victims of their own folly. That's the bottom line. The whole system has to go.
And the singularity is coming?
I don't know. I honestly don't know because, you know, if Ray Kurzweil wants to go off and merge with machines and send his consciousness to the stars, fine, have at it, Ray. But the fact of the matter is the rest of us have to live in reality and deal with human problems on this world, with poverty, environmental degradation, corporate capital cronyism. You know, the socialists want their experiment to be run yet again, you know, as if we haven't got enough historical examples of that failure. So, you know, we've got to start. We're facing real problems. And the problem is the elite have no solutions other than the tried ones. And they've been found wanting. And we're going to put in an educational system that gives us more of the same.
Right, right. So their common core, their singularity, their transhumanism is kind of like their own weird fantasy at the end of their rope. You know, it's the end of their string of controlling things.
Yeah, it is. It's, I don't mean to be crude about it, but it's their wet dream. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. And they're trying to impose this vision, which is fundamentally anti-human, on the rest of society. And ultimately, for that reason alone, it is destined to fail.
Right.
You know, it's failing already. I know, and if your teacher is listening to this, you know already what I'm talking about. Because most teachers that I know that the system is bad. They know that it is totally wrong. It's set up completely falsely. So what they do is they teach subversively. They literally do. They'll do their stint to teach the students for the state-required test, but they try to get as much time in class as they are able to do, away from the prying eyes of the principal, away from the state education commissars. They try and inject as much of a traditional academic philosophy and education as they can in a system that is designed to counteract it.
Wow.
And I, you know, my heart goes out to these teachers. I have a few of them that are members of my website. I have one person that actually has a daughter that homeschools. And, you know, this little kid paints amazing pictures. She shared them with me. And, I, you know, would this kid be doing that in a public school? No. Not a chance. Not a chance.
That's amazing. Incredible stuff, Joseph. Spread out over these three episodes, dealing with important subjects like the deep state election between Trump and Clinton, the transhumanist movement, of course, and really discovering the roots of the social engineering that is Common Core in this episode. I think this book will do great when people who were blown away by your Hidden Finance book discover there's a second one out this year. Then, you know, it's going to sort of zoom up the charts.
I hope so. You know, I wanted to put this out, and Dr. Lawrence wanted to put this out with during the political season, because when we wrote the book, we didn't realize that Donald Trump was against Common Core.
Yeah.
And, you know, we thought, well, another billionaire busybody. But we're hoping that this will become a subject of concern for people.
Oh, yeah.
Our kids are not learning the basics of American history, jurisprudence, law, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, our science, you know, everything. This is a waste.
Yes, it's a waste. That's actually a good way to sum up their efforts here. But ultimately, mm-hmm. I guess we have to ask, who gains?
Well, they gain in the short term. They gain mechanisms of power and control. But ultimately, like I say, when you're creating conditions of third world stupidity and poverty, ultimately they lose as well, because who's going to buy their products?
Yeah, there's that short-sightedness again.
They've created such overhead for themselves, they have to charge an arm and a leg for their stupid products, and at the same time they've shipped everybody's jobs overseas. They're dumbing everybody down so no one can afford to buy their products. Come on, folks. Read your Adam Smith, you know. This is not the way it works.
Well, it definitely will be interesting to see what's coming down from the edugarchy. I definitely like that term. And I think education surveillance state is also a great turn of phrase. It's a powerful statement, and it's definitely appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Now, just amazing stuff. The book is Rotten to the Common Core. You can get it at GizaDeathStar.com, and that's a great read. I think you really enjoy it. Of course, we have great shows coming up for you for October, so subscribe now. We're still running that discount, but just a little longer to get everyone on board. It's a great value to have all the shows, the high-quality audio and the HD video, at your fingertips. And Joseph, we'll have you back just before the election happens so we can see what's going on there.
Oh, dear.
That should be fun.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with Dr. Joseph Farrell on social engineering and the surveillance state. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.